Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Kush and Kai. I'm Kai.
I'm Kush.
How you doing today, buddy?
You know what? I'm going to be up front. I'm not happy with the way my microdose went just earlier.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that's why we're going to make this episode even better.
It's going to rock. We're going to rock it. You know why? We're watching
The Fisher King.
The Fisher King from 1991, directed by Terry Gilliam of Monty Python fame and other lesser fames. But that's where he got his start. And that would also make this the reason this is the second movie he directed about the Holy Grail.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He did Monty Python before that, and then he did Time Bandits in between the two, yes?
Indeed. Okay. Indeed. And another one of my favorite Gilliam films that we'll visit at some point, Brazil, also directed by Gilliam.
Okay.
And there's a poster for it in the video store office. It is up on the wall.
That was during a time in the early 90s where the director could easily just advertise his previous work in his current work.
Yeah, there is a video store that plays very prominently in this movie, mm-hmm. and I was trying to read all of the titles.
Oh.
Because there's real movies, then there's some I can't tell, where it's like, did they make some of this up?
No, the movie is produced by Columbia TriStar Motion Pictures, and so all those movies in the video store are TriStar releases.
Gotcha.
So Ghostbusters is in there, Ghostbusters 2.
I saw Roxanne
got knocked over the shit. A bunch of copies of Roxanne, in fact.
Yes, there was a number of things. Yeah. Indeed, I wanted to walk around that video store so bad in 1991 New York. Like, that would have been a treat. And go through the process, get my card laminated, pay the fee. That would have been great. Pick out a tape.
Did you ever have a video membership?
A couple, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, there was Blockbuster, but we had I had one to a little store named Movie Craze. Sorry, Joe. It's Movie Craze. It was on 4th and Balboa.
Okay.
And that little funny little store. Yeah. I worked there, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then there was a couple others, but that one loomed large in my mind, because we also had freestanding VHS boxes that I had to dust that nobody touched. They just went to the folder of DVD covers in a binder at the front. All the DVDs were in these two binders.
Oh, fascinating.
Indeed. And so it made usage a little bit easier. Anyway, I digress. Mm-hmm. We watched The Fisher King. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges plays Shock Jock.
Shock Jock.
Shock Jock. Jack Lucas. Mm-hmm. And he is out to take down the yuppies, and he does not care who he offends.
And his idea of Edge is playing Hit the Road Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the Road Jack.
Oh, Jack. After making... There's such... Okay. The movie, it starts obsessed with the idea of Shock Jocks, which at the time... 1991 was when Stern first went into syndication.
The character is supposed to be based on Stern.
Of course. This is, I mean, this the idea germinated from Howard Stern, New York Shock Jock.
Yeah.
So it's got that, but even though he plays an asshole very well in this movie.
Yes, he does.
Jeff Bridges as Jack. And like, it's still Jeff Bridges, and I love him. I want him to make good choices for himself and his family. I want him to be healthy and sane, and just like he just oozes compassion.
Now, what is the Jeff Bridges you see every time you see Jeff Bridges? Is this Flynn Jeff Bridges? Is this the guy from the Western? Which Jeff Bridges is this for you?
Was it the dude?
The dude. This is always the dude.
I see the dude, but then in all of his other thing, you know, he gets shades of stuff. Mm-hmm. What was that one? Hell or High Water?
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, that's Grandpa Bridges, mm-hmm. who has seen some shit, you mm-hmm. know? And then the dude is Uncle Bridges, who's like, oh, he forgot to pick me up from soccer, but now he's letting me run on the roof of the El Camino. Okay. Like, awesome. Okay. Yeah, and this is New York Bridges.
This is
he's the most... Like, he's the most New York thing.
He's every New York stereotype.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
He's an asshole shock jock from a New Yorker in the 90s.
He's got a penthouse apartment downtown.
Yelling about yuppies. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's the most New York.
He's got CDs on display. Mm-hmm. Like, again, that was a big thing. If you had CDs.
Further than that, this movie is New York. Mm-hmm. There are some scenes in here that we will get to. Sorry. We just started right off the top. With our Jeff Bridges. He is a shock jock. All right. And We're going to. This is a clip of him talking to some caller, talking to a caller, just to get us a feel for his character.
Edwin, we haven't heard from you in what, a day? I've missed you.
I've missed you too, Jack.
So it's sunrise confession time, Ed. What have you got for us?
I went to this bar, this very, hard to get into place called Babbitt's.
Oh, yeah, Babbitt's. I know the place. It's one of those chic, yuppie watering holes.
Yuppies. Well, I met this beautiful woman.
Oh, come on now, Ed. If you start telling me you're falling in love again, I'm going to have to remind you of that time we made you propose to that checkout girl at Thrifty's that you like so much. Do you remember her reaction?
She was just a girl. This is a beautiful woman.
Yeah, and Pinocchio is a true story. Ed, you're never going to get this tart to your dessert plate.
No, this is different.
Edwin.
She likes
Edwin. Hey, Edwin! Hey, come on now. I told you about these people. They only mate with their own kind. It's called yuppie inbreeding.
There
That's why so many of them are retarded and wear the same clothes. They're not human. They don't feel love. They only negotiate
Jeff
love
Bridges
moments.
Is as much a yuppie as
they're evil,
he
Edwin.
Could be in
they're
this
by imperfection, horrified by the banal, everything that America stands for, everything that you and I fight for. It must be stopped before it's too late. It's us or them.
Okay, Jack.
All right.
Okay, so...
Oh, you cut it off at the... I got the power.
Oh, sorry, here we go.
Well, it's been a thrill.
He does play that
as
to
always,
sign off.
Have a perfect day.
This comes up a couple
Everyone
times.
Here at the...
Oh, sorry.
This was one of 15 movies that had this song, and this movie plays it three times. So
15.
I love that
one
song.
One of 15 in 1991, you
In
mean.
1991.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was... The sickness was still just being poured over all the soundtracks. I remember when we used to talk about... Not we, but... Yuppies was a thing.
Yuppies, yeah.
That was a thing. It was like a problem or
the evolution of the hippies. They put the pot down, they started doing the cocaine, they tied their hair back in a ponytail, and they put on a suit.
And what so then it became so then did yuppie what will we call yuppie now? Is that just like
dot comers in a t-shirt?
Oh, the 1% or
no dot comers.
Dot comers? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, how is it related? I mean, if we had to, it's not rich people, right?
Well,
or is it?
They have money.
Yeah,
they definitely have money, but they're upper middle class,
upper middle class,
lower high class.
So they're who the ultra rich are targeting with the gentrifying.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm just trying to get the targets down here because yuppie hating was like I remember. It was derogatory, or it was a pejorative. It was like, hey, yuppie. It was there, and he's embodying that, and that's the angle they're going with. They could have gone, it would have been a mistake to go like a little racial or something, but it could shade that way. Do you know what I mean? Because with Shock Jock, like there could be a draft where it's drastically different, but that's a very yuppie's very safe in that way, and it does address us the story. I will jump us in because. The movie has not begun yet.
No.
Movie has not begun yet because we're about to jump ahead in time a little because we're going to pivot off of his deeds as a shock jock.
Now, Jack has had his show like he's had any other day of the week. He goes home. He's preparing for a TV spot the next day. Mm-hmm. Or He's online to have his own TV show.
I think it's called On the Air as well.
On the Air. I wonder what it's about.
Yeah.
So, but he's obsessed with this one tagline, and he says it every other possible way he could possibly say it in every room of the house as he's bathing, while he's eating, while he's bathing and eating.
Well, forgive me.
Forgive me.
Forgive me.
Forgive me.
Forgive me.
Forgive me.
That part is just before this. I should have slipped it in. But it is, and it's a fun, it caught me off guard because they were marching along that. He's an ass, he's a shock jock. This is like a weird personal, like vulnerable moment where he's fantasizing about, because he has this douchey line where he goes, babe, they're going to put me on film tomorrow. And she's like, you're going to be in a sitcom. You're not.
For 20 years, I've been a voice without a face or a body.
Now I'm going to be the voice behind the face. it was the face. He's like, I'm the face behind the face. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
It's a big deal. And he's super obsessed with it. And why wouldn't he be? He finally takes a break from mastering his line. And that's when he turns on the news.
Yeah.
And to his horror, he finds out what we're about to see here.
It's too late. It's us or them.
It was Mr. Lucas's offhand remark that seemed to have fatal impact on Mr. Melnick.
Feeling good
Mark
about himself.
Mark Saffron is on the scene.
An after-work hotspot, Babbitt's is popular with single young professionals. Edwin Malnick arrived at the peak hour of 7:15, took one long look at the handsome collection of the city's best and brightest, then removed a shotgun from his overcoat and opened fire.
They're showing, they're getting
seven
real graphic
were killed
with the
before
news.
Mr. Malnick turned the gun on himself,
the weight of the situation
was head.
Is absolutely
of radio
hitting him.
So Jack
he loses strength in his legs. He has to sit down.
His mouth is agape.
This is not good for Jack.
And they are just pounding. They had just pounded all these images of like just oh, there's more bodies, like dead bodies, just being wheeled out.
Only through the radio, looking for friendship, and finding only pain and tragedy.
He is horrified.
Mark Saffron, Channel 7 News.
And there it goes.
And his life is forever changed.
And that actually is where the movie goes, because then we get a crawl, or I mean, just a title card that says 3 years later. I mean, nobody says it, but I always hear that voice in my head.
3 years later.
3 years later.
I like it.
Six
yeah.
months later. I think
do you hear that every time that title card comes out?
Yes.
No matter what movie?
Yes. Ever since, it wasn't They're All Gonna Laugh at You, it was an Adam Sandler album.
Gotcha.
Where I think Adam Covert does a weird voice and just it's necessary to the story.
Gotcha.
Or 8 weeks later. Yeah.
Yes. He throws it out. I remember that.
Yeah. I think that was the one with the cult where he makes his friend join the cult.
Nighttime is the right time.
Sorry they had to make you kill your father.
Nighttime is the right time. I don't remember much.
Oh, it was the only way to save a man.
Okay.
The nighttime. Yeah. Those got into me deep.
Hmm.
Okay. So it's horrifying. Horror. All the horror.
All the horror.
And then. Yeah, we jumped to 3 years. So this would have been did they float? They didn't float which year it was.
They didn't say what year it is. I imagine it's now present day
to whatever that
present day 1991. And Jack has fallen off. He's no longer a DJ. He is in fact an alcoholic,
a
hardcore alcoholic.
Yes, and like many alcoholics, he works at a video store
for his girlfriend, who owns and operates the video store, the beautiful Mercedes Ruel. The only person in this movie. This was a big movie in 1991, and it got like seven or eight Oscar nominees. And of all of them, she was the only one who walked away with a statue that night.
Best supporting.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic job. Deserved it, but damn. She was the only one out of this whole group of definitely noteworthy. We should go back and look at the winners, see if this holds up.
Yeah.
We can relitigate that one. And there is that Brazil poster that in Anne, his Mercedes rules office.
Okay.
And it's another Gilliam film I love. And that night they do a thing that is fantastic, which is he is watching and it's 3 years later. So the show he was supposed to be in.
He's watching the real show about the...
Yeah. Yeah, on the air. Harry Shearer has been awarded his part.
Excuse me.
Hey, I'm sorry. No, that's
Steve Martin.
That's the Steve Martin one where they stole it from.
Gotcha.
But God, the line that he has. Jeff Bridges is talking about how he watches it because he needs to know that it's not good. But it's just, he drinks heavily and is just racked with... He's just
angst and self-hatred.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Meanwhile, this girl's on the couch just laughing her ass off. And she's like, what? You're making me watch this fucking movie.
She's trying to enjoy the show.
Yeah.
Harry Shearer, fantastic. And then, for his career, too, because he was definitely off of Spinal Tap.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a ton of stuff.
The Simpsons is just maybe 3 years old at best at this time.
91, 89. Yeah, and they're... Well, they would have made it in 90. So, yeah, that's the first 2 years of The Simpsons were, they got crazy big.
Mm-hmm.
The knockoff merchandising was probably the best. In the rush from the countries that loved them, and it was, like, just a little off. Always wonderful. The Forgive Me thing is dropped. And so that's when he gets the angriest, is when she leaves from watching with him. He tells her to shut up, and he's just mad. He's just going to go back to... She turns up the volume and leaves him, and then he hears his catchphrase, and then it leads him to throwing the remote at the TV destructively, drunkenly stumbling outside, tearing his coat, and then falling into trash cans. Way over the top, like, you're drunk, you stumble!
That's a thing for some reason. I've never, like, how do people get that bad?
And he's been, so this must be the worst, though, right? Mm-hmm. This must be building to this 3 years
of this.
This is
him hitting the bottom.
This is it. This is rock bottom, because he's drunk, he's stumbling around, he sees a man that does not dissimilar from him, just asking for help, and people treat him dismissively, like he has to others. And then a small yuppie boy hands him a Pinocchio nutcracker.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're outside the Ritz or wherever that is.
I don't know. Maybe he was a huge fan, and he said Pinocchio. Mm. He used it as an insult before. So it's very fitting that he gets a Pinocchio doll.
Nice. Okay.
A little on the nose, but
symbolism.
He does take this Pinocchio doll under his wing, and he proceeds to fill it in on some philosophy. I needed to pull this this little monologue of his about Nietzsche.
Break it down.
Oh, yeah.
Ever read any Nietzsche? Nietzsche says there are two kinds of people in the world. People who are destined.
He's talking to the Pinocchio doll.
Like Walt Disney and Hitler. And then there's the rest of us. He called us the bungled and the botched. Mm. You get teased. You sometimes get close to greatness, but you never get there. You're the expendable
master.
He made
that statue look extra filthy. He's sitting on top of newspapers. Newspapers are sticking to it as they're blowing trains.
Hollywood has me believe anything. This is how New York genuinely looked back in those days.
It was. It was very.
So.
You want to hear the new title of my biography?
He is so over
Italian friend.
Oh, Italian friend.
It was my fucking picnic. The Jet Lucas story. You like it? Il nuovo est fucking picnico.
He's talking. He's got the doll in his hands. He's you talking to him.
Nietzsche.
You say no to drugs.
Oh, man. Jack Daniels is his drink of choice. Oh, he's
Should just kept smoking weed.
Yeah.
Oh, now he's giving the puppet a hug.
He's hugging the puppet.
You know, you get the feeling sometimes you're being punished for your sins.
Yes, I feel that the script is calling for that. You just told us, so you kind of tipped your hand. But, yeah, he's not doing great here. But
it's as bad as it could get. So he pretty much just stumbles from there under a bridge.
Well, to find cinder blocks that he ties to his feet.
Okay, so he does that.
Yeah.
Yes.
He does that. He is going to kill himself. We've seen the moment. This is propelling us further into the first act. He's at his lowest low, and two thugs come across him, and
they drive up on him in a Jeep, right?
Yeah, tactical drive up in the Jeep. They get out. They've got gasoline. Yes. They're going to light him on fire. Hmm. And so I guess fire would be a no-go because he doesn't want to die all of a sudden, or at least he's concerned.
Yeah.
But they're going to kill him. And that's when our hero enters, Robin Williams, and as Perry. Hmm. And he confronts the thugs. He shoots one of them in the dick with an arrow, like a beanbag arrow.
Okay.
They kind of grab him. But his backup shows up, and they sing them in ensemble into distraction. I would have pulled this clip, but there's a lot of, like, I had it pulled out, but then there's a lot of, it's not great.
No.
But the general idea is that they distract him, and then Robin Williams, hits him with a paperweight and a sock.
Okay.
Yeah, he knocks him down. And we get a little bit of his philosophy about how you have to treat human living things kindly.
Yes.
We get some noble sentiments there. Then they sing. They get the best of them. And he brings Jack, who's still not doing great.
No, Jack is dead drunk and
confused and scared.
Smells like gasoline.
Well, he almost committed suicide, and then the next moment was almost executed. They're right under the Manhattan Bridge right there. I think that's right where it looks right where Remember Scarecrow was having people executed?
Yes.
It looked like that's the part that froze
they had
over.
To walk over. They had to walk on the frozen ice.
I think if Jack would have jumped, like if you do showed a scene where like people are jumping, you know, like walking across the ice, right. And you could just Jack and the cinder blocks and the Pinocchio doll down there.
Yeah.
That's a great Easter egg. That's a great Easter egg. That's a deep cut. It's a deep one.
I don't think the execs of Sony would ever partnership with WB for that.
Probably not. So Perry brings him back to the homeless encampment, which is kooky to say the least. It's supposed to be weird. And so people are just acting weird. Mm-hmm. And then Jack lights himself on fire accidentally and then manages to put it out where everyone starts applauding.
Yeah. It was spectacular, to be honest. Like, he kept that thing going for a good 30 seconds.
It was good. And yeah. Then, yeah, they're like, well, it was like a trick. And then he tries to get out of there, falls down, and one of the other homeless folks kindly makes him drink.
Force feeds him more booze.
Oh, you drink that! It was so violent. Drink it up! And he passes out. And then he's at Perry's place, which is a boiler room.
Perry lives in his under his old apartment in the boiler room, as you mentioned. And we find out more about that later. But we get to see Perry's establishment. And Perry's homemade weapons, which is great. It's a Ford grill.
Yeah.
That he's managed to grind down to be as sharp as a sword. I wish we could have seen some more of that, to be honest.
That was cool. I don't know if he ever used it. It looked ceremonial. It was pretty more clean. For a guy that lives in a boiler room and has no hygiene habits.
I think it would have maimed for sure.
Yeah, it would have. But no, I think that, yeah, ceremonial and function. Apparently, his weapons of choice are Dick Arrow. And paperweight in a sock, which are pretty effective. Mm. If you could, he hit that guy at like 20 paces.
He made it work.
Wait, I couldn't do that. You know what I mean? I need some practice.
That. No.
And it's like a blunted ball that's flying. It's hard. Yeah. And then, yeah, singing, distraction. He's got the team. And then he can hit you with the paperweight. Pretty good.
That's better than the Avengers.
That's pretty good. I'm sorry I don't have that moment where he says, "Can you guess what I am?" And he goes, "Shing!" He's like, "You're a hood ornament." Like, it's such a visual joke.
Yeah.
So we understand that he is on a quest for the Holy Grail. And he lines this all up with a great, it's actually the second time bowel movement's brought up already. It's a Rob Williams movie. Hmm. But he details how he had an epic bowel movement that bordered on a religious experience. And all of a sudden, as soon as he let go, hundreds of little fat cherubs flying around that spoke to him and told him that he needed to find this thing. And they gave him the info as a page number in Progressive Architecture Magazine, page 33, February issue. And there it was on the shelf of some billionaire.
Wow. Robin Williams had this gift of just talking 100 miles a minute. So if you are not absolutely paying attention to what the man is saying, you're just hearing sounds.
It's gone.
And frequencies.
Oh, and
it'll still make you laugh because for some reason, it's programmed your brain to laugh. But I've seen this movie twice now, and I never known that that's how he knew. That's how he came on the Grail quest.
Oh, yeah. And also, too, for Robin Williams, and he will make jokes on what he's just said in a voice so it can lose you. But, yeah, that part, I don't think I got probably, because I saw this, you know, when I was in 10, 11.
Okay.
Pretty recently after it came out. And then I didn't get it for, like, 10 years after that or exactly why he was looking for it.
Yeah.
But, we've been propelled, and he needs Robin Williams. Perry needs Jack to help him
to
complete the quest. And so on he's been called the first time for his duty, and he denies.
Yes, he rejects the claim. He wants nothing to do with this quest. This is crazy. And he ultimately leaves Perry's boiler room.
Indeed.
Where he meets the landlord.
On his way out, we meet the landlord who tells Jack that Perry's wife was killed in the attack that he inspired. Mm-hmm. So that's a bummer.
That's a heavy.
That's a rough one.
Yeah. It's not good for a hangover.
The next scene was really fun because he goes back and tells Anne what happened. And Anne, who was stood up because Jack was just out, She tells Jack, and it's a, they just have such good chemistry together. Esther sees, well, you seeing somebody? Is it this? And then she boils it down to, then she's concerned. Like, she just can turn, she just turns on a dime with these emotions.
She's really got it going on.
And so they're in the office, and she closes the door. It's like, oh my God, what happened? And then somebody calls up from the desk and says, like, somebody wants to come up to look at the porn. They're in the porn room, where normally there'd be the
curtain. Her office is the porn room.
His office is the porn room. And so the guy comes up, and they're trying to talk, and she's just completely distracted by him. So she goes over, he's like, what? What do you want? What do you look at? He's like, well, I don't know. Like, do you want a story? A story?
Yeah, and he's like, I've seen most of these.
And so he hands her, Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh, wow.
Kramer versus Kramer. It won an award. Here, take it. She pushes him out, and he takes it, which is great. Let's see. Yeah, she shoos the guy out of the room. And then we really get to the next scene, which is basically like, okay, that happened. And then Perry finds Jack again randomly on the street. And we find out that he is a stalker.
Oh, yes.
Because he's asking about Lydia. Or he's asking him to watch. And they have the scene where they're stalking.
Oh, okay. Well, Jack goes out to find Perry specifically. And I don't, he checks the camp here, he checks the camp there, and someone finally tells him to go to this building, and sure enough, Perry's sitting on the hood of a car.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I got that back.
Car alarm just blaring, no one giving a damn whatsoever. Bell strikes noon. Perry snaps out of his fucking hibernation, or his catatonic state, and off they go. They go looking for Lydia. And as you say, yes, Perry has indeed been stalking her.
He knows her exact schedule.
Her exact schedule, down to the details of how many times she'll shake her nose.
Mm-hmm. Favorite foods, timing of when she leaves the building. I mean, it is also endearing to.
In 1991, this is very sweet because it's Robin Williams. But any other time, this is criminal.
Well. If you redid this now with different people and took out the musical score, it's a
horror movie.
Yeah, there's a homeless guy like stalking you from your belly. Like, yeah, it could work that way. I'm sure we could probably find that too. It was made a couple years after that. And then that ends. Oh yeah, that scene. I did not get them looking into the window because another very visual gag. But he goes full New Yorker where. They're stalking Lydia. They go up to...
I'm looking in the fucking window here. You got a problem with that?
The people are annoyed because they're like, their faces are right in their mouth. But yes, fucking goes full New York. You got a problem? Great. Just great. And then we also... This is the first time where he shows... Perry shows Jack where the Holy Grail is.
Yes.
And it's in a brick building.
Looks like a castle.
It does. I should have looked up I knew before what it was... Mm. And it wasn't a church, but it was some hall of some group.
It is
still there. Jack is trying to talk him out of it, and that does not go great. So
he's trying to pay him off.
Yeah, he's trying to... He feels guilty.
He's got the guilties, and understandable.
Yeah. He feels guilty, and he wants to make amends. He does tell Anne that, where he's like... I feel indebted, you know, because he saved his life.
Yeah.
So he thinks it's with money. But anyway, this is Persis on our quest.
Jack,
this is,
you've got a lot to learn.
This is very much like a life debt that some Wookiees abide by. Gungans, too.
Oh, my.
For some reason.
Will you shut up?
Oh, you hear me? I'm loopy about this guy. Oh, Jack. Oh, you're a real human being. Oh, you're a friend. A true friend.
I'm not, believe me. You're scum.
Come on. I'm not gonna listen. You're an honest to goodness good guy.
Self-centered, I'm weak. I don't have the willpower of a fly on shit.
That's what the little people sent you. They knew that. It's like magic.
I don't believe in little floating people, okay? There is no magic.
Aw.
But you're still gonna help me, Jack. That's what matters.
Perry. Perry, or whatever your name is.
Uh-oh.
You know none of this is true. Jack. The Grail, the voices. Jack, there's a part of you that knows it's not true.
I think we have to start planning now.
Perry, Jack. Listen to me.
Jack,
bringing out Perry's demons.
You're acting weird, Jack.
Here they come.
I know who you are. You're an
intelligent... Jack! Let go of me!
You used to teach
Jack!
Undercover.
No!
Perry,
no!
You're a teacher!
No!
himself to the concrete and starts having a fit.
He's clutching his ears up. We're looking. We can't see what he is seeing.
Perry!
But he...
Perry!
And the most scariest thing on horseback ever.
Yes, the Red Knight makes his appearance. Full regalia, people.
Terry Gilliam knows how to put a man on horseback and make it just terrifying.
Make it look fucking crazy.
Yeah.
He's got big red, where like a banner would be, but it's kind of furry and like fucked up.
I can't even describe it, but it's...
It looks like he's spiky and he was toilet papered with evil.
We've got him!
And he's underlit. In midday, they underlit him somehow. Oh!
Holy shit!
Perry giving chase, hit by a taxi in the street. He's up, though. He is up. Jeff Bridges giving chase. Oh, there we go. Okay.
And then they follow the path of the dogs from Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's right. So they go through the park. They get up onto the plateau piece. A lot of park action in this, too. Central Park is it was a useful place. I would say is for them as filmmakers, too, where they were on a fairly tight schedule and budget. So it was like, go to the park.
Okay.
Indeed. Get out of the place. So they hear from someone... in need of help, and that turns out to be Michael Jeter, who I think was hit by a horse or something, or was asking a horse to be hit, but he is lying in horse poop and he's bleeding.
He's burying himself deeper in horse poop, which is...
He's just a pathetic, sad creature.
This movie highlights mental instability very well.
It does.
Mental health issues are a big theme for this film.
And we explore his love of theater, cabaret, very fond of it, but also he does reference all, I believe that is a reference where he said all of his friends are gone.
Yeah.
About the AIDS epidemic. Which fucking, yeah. At the time, too, it was like, oh yeah, there's just whole rolls of folks that are gone now. So definite on that end. And then, yes, they take Michael Jeter to the hospital where that we fill in for.
No one cares.
They're just there.
Yeah.
They just suck.
The hospital seems to be the worst place in the world to go.
That looks like a terrible hospital.
Yes. You can't get any attention unless you're the pizza delivery guy, and then all of a sudden 20 surgeons run out to... Which, based on doctor shows I've seen today, they don't put that shit in their body.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But...
But I get the point.
Oh, boy. Yeah, all of his buddies were dead. And they leave there.
Mm-hmm.
They're still... I don't think they're going anywhere. There's a meandering scene in here. Because this is... They make a transition from Grail Quest to... It's a buddy comedy.
We gotta get Lydia to notice Robin Williams.
Yeah, so that becomes the bigger plot. And so it's like... Then it becomes like a tale of redemption through his friendship. Like he's trying to redeem himself and they become closer. So the movie changes gears and then it kind of sets itself up again, which, guys, I love all the small moments and I am nostalgic about them because like I remember this movie. But you could make a compelling 100-minute version of this. There's a lot of them walking around. Like the scene where, and you were just saying about like different levels of mental health. They find Tom Waits in
That's
a wheelchair.
Right.
Tom Waits has a little appearance. He's
hanging
Tom
out at
Waits.
Grand Central Station.
But he's got the cup out, and he's asking for, you know, asking for change. And he tells a very sad story about, I believe it was his brother, who also is suffering from demons and such. So I guess, yeah, I'll allow it. It's like they're just filling in this side where shit sucks, and they're all around where nobody cares about you.
That's right. We're back at Grand Central Station so we can watch Lydia get on the train.
Indeed.
And there's a wonderful scene where it goes from this steady rush of people and then all of a sudden everyone starts waltzing.
The music swells.
Yeah.
People are dancing.
It's disco ball.
It's at night in Grand Central Station. Just even if you don't, you know what I mean?
It's a really neat transition.
Even if you don't like this movie or the director or what have you, this is a cool New York thing. It's such a cool spot to see that. And they're there and they're moving around and they're dancing and people, it's just so seamless. The whole thing, whole floor, people are doing it. Apparently they shot that in one night too. They didn't know if they were going to do it. And they used some extras and some cast folks and people getting off the train and it worked, which is great. And then also one of the most magical pieces about it is that at the very end, they're all dancing, they all stop and go back to what they go back to what they were doing.
Mm.
Fucking great.
Yeah.
Just
seamless.
Great. Even And because they actually key it on a woman's face who's participating, and she's dancing, and then pow, right back to reality, walking. You're like, ooh, damn. Real good. Real good cut there. So that was magical, along with a lot of the other just New York things and things and pieces. That definitely goes on the list. Oh, yeah. And with so this,
pretty much the scene ends there, and Jack is now at his home. Perry is wherever Perry is.
Yeah.
And that was a good thing. We never used to actually have to follow people immediately to their door. We could just go to another scene, and it's the next day.
Indeed.
And he's wrestling around with some old cassette decks, and Jack's got a plan, and he's figured out he's going to put Lydia and Perry together. And by doing that, he's concocted a plan where Lydia has won a free membership to his girlfriend's video store.
That is true. That is true.
And at first, she's not buying it. And she royally hangs up. And then they send Michael Jeter out there with balloons, and he's in a dress, and he looks like, what's that woman's name?
Liza Minnelli? From Cabaret?
No, the other one. Carol Channing.
Carol Channing, sorry. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And he puts on a full clinic as far as whatever he's doing.
They had to bring out the big guns because they didn't. They tried to do the radio call, the radio prank call, like, you want a thing, and get her down. Wasn't going for it.
She's not having it.
Lydia did not buy it. So they had to bring out the big guns. They go to Michael Jeter with the singing telegram. Are you ready
for
a clip?
You must
be. I'm glad you pulled this one.
Gives her the balloons.
She is horrified.
I had a dream.
In front of her.
A dream
whole office. Wooden cubicles.
It wasn't for her.
Looks like a municipal
Lydia.
Office.
It's publishing, though.
It's gotcha. Only for you, yes,
oh, go for
Lydia.
It, Michael. He's getting
Some
up on the counter.
Can get their kicks.
He has not shaved his legs.
He's
totally disrupting the office space.
The high heels are clacking.
That's okay for some people.
And she is just shrinking into her chair.
People are
Lydia.
Coworkers. Oh, there's
but
a second
Lydia,
level. Coworkers are watching her embarrassment. She's like shifting her legs like she needs to pee.
She's going into a fetal position in her chair.
No one's. Everyone has stopped.
No.
All work.
We're about to get to a shot here where they try and hide it, but she is cracking up in her chair.
Oh, we got a little butt shot there.
There. She is losing her shit right there.
For you, Lydia, for
dozens of people.
Wow. I can't do that.
Oh, the best. The best. Look, the switchboard stopped the phones.
Yeah.
That's how much they needed to pay attention to this. Everyone stopped what they were doing, including the switchboard. They just turned off all the calls for the floor.
It was a great
Nothing
timing
happened.
For that phone.
Perfect. Oh, my gosh. So that works.
So that gets her attention, and she goes to the video store. Now, while we were stalking Lydia with Perry, she seems like the most awkward person who should just be thankful that she's alive every day. And when she gets to the video store, we meet a completely different Lydia. She's kind of a bitch.
Yeah, the Lydia that doesn't know anybody is so, like, the one that Perry sees and gets to narrate cutely and has the little flute, playful flute under it where she's like, can't eat a dumpling or picking out a thing or just wiggling the nose. But then we see she does a full, like, the hardest core Woody Allen impression. Like, it's full. It's 2:11. The yes. mannerisms, the, well, and it's just, it's too much.
So it's free for a year, but then I got to pay.
Yeah. And then the money, the stingy part was a little like, all right. Because I was immediately like, you're doing a Woody Allen impression. We don't need to. She was so stingy. And then also, when she gets there, they've dressed Perry up to look semi-normal.
Semi-normal.
They haven't showered him, though. That part didn't...
That was a big problem.
I think that part did not occur to Jack.
No.
Because this was his plan, right?
Yeah. So
he's like, let's get her there. And she is not interested in movies at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they knock over a bunch of movies. This is what we were talking about earlier. They're in the video store. This gag we liked, because this comes up a couple of times.
Yeah.
Not interested in movies. They don't have, what was it, Rita Rudner? No. No, sorry, it was a musical.
It could have been anyway. It doesn't matter. Mm. It doesn't matter.
They don't have that, yeah. So she's not having it. So she wants to leave. But just as she's about to, she spots Anne's nails that have a little star engraved on the, or not engraved, but painted on, and they're very nice. And she's like, I'd like to do that. And Jack tries to say, like, well, since you're a member, you could. And Anne goes, like,
$40. $40.
And she goes for it. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like.
That's a great thing, because she starts doing math in her head, and she's shifting numbers around. And she's like, well, maybe if I don't do this on that day, and then I can do it. And then she finally is like, okay, $40.
Yeah. And it, yeah, I don't, I mean, because she didn't come across as, like, poverty stricken.
No. She's
cheap too. That
she's definitely cheap, but she's also like autistic or something. Like she's literally doing math out loud. She's carrying
that's
the two.
True.
Like,
we could, yeah, a little spectrum-y. Yeah. We could, that's yeah. Especially because her reaction when they called and said, "Oh, you won. You're oh yeah. Do you have a major credit card?" I was like, "Am I on a list?" And she was going. She was trying to like, no, but I didn't give out with the thing. Yeah, it was hard.
Helen, an accountant, put you up to this.
Exactly. She was resistant, definitely. And then also too, I think we skip past Anne gets stood up multiple times multiple by the time times. Of this movie, and you're like, oh, I want to go back. I mean, I love you know seeing Anne be hurt. Mercedes, just I.
It's awful.
Oh, my goodness.
Shame on you, Jeff.
She just made a lasagna, right? Yeah. She works that cleavage.
Yes.
Like, what's not to like?
Like a saint.
She's hilarious. She's touching. I mean, I fell in love with Anne. Sorry. Looked away from my notes. Not interested in that, but she does go for the nail painting and goes for the $40, and they make it that night. And, of course, now, since Anne is involved in the plan, she has Jack shower and trim Perry, and we get a great, like a double-double scene, and it's so just great. This is the epitome of the buddy-buddy thing, because they're planning their wingman thing,
yes,
and we're getting a little bit of philosophy from Lydia, from Anne, who has plied her with tequila. So she's progressively getting drunk and revealing more like fears about herself. Like at one point she says, I'm a man. I was a man in another life and I did horrible things and that's why I'm alone. And you're like just the philosophy of the character starts to leak out. And then you cut to Jack stapling.
He found his suit that was way too big for Perry.
He's stapling the hem of the leg up and he's like, there you go.
And it works.
This is a great, touching little scene.
In fact, I would dare to say, even if that wasn't Robin Williams, that would probably work. Like, how many people look at your pant cuffs?
No, yeah. I think it'd be fine. And then he gets the beard trimmed out real nice, which is good. He gets the wash. They do have a shot of his hair, like in at the salon. They've got the wash bucket.
Yes.
So he is reclined. I think Anne has one of these still because she used to be in the. The beauty
is that's her whole thing.
Yeah. That's what used to be her bag. She used to wear and yes, the brownest, bracky looking water in the bowl. It was
3 years of filth coming out of that hair.
Absolutely. There's poop shows up a few times in this. There's horse poop. There's human poop. There's talk of poop. People smell like poop. It's very New York. Yeah,
so much poop.
There's a actually speaking of poop and time and place. Let me do this because this pops up. This had already popped up, but. They do some cloud busting in this.
Like Elvis?
Yes. I believe like Elvis, but naked and in Central Park. And we'll just go from there.
That's
usually where
fair.
I'm naked.
Well, I don't. Right? What are you doing?
I'm cloud busting, Jack. You ever done it?
Robin's disrobing.
You lie on your back and you concentrate on the clouds and you break them apart with your mind. It's wild. No, but you have to be nude, though, Jack.
You can't.
Because you
do
can't
this.
Diffuse the psychic energy.
This is New York.
My
no
family subscribes
to
this idea.
In New York. It's
not the
Midwest
nudity part.
Come on,
you
Jack.
With
it's
your mind.
Wild. It's really freeing.
What?
I mean, the air on your
he
body,
is
your
naked,
nipples
naked.
Are hard. Little guy dangling in the wind.
Hey, come on.
I don't think he's the sun.
Hey.
And we're bare ass naked in the middle of it.
I'm not doing this. This is nuts. I'm leaving.
Jack, free yourself. Free yourself.
Robin Williams is not afraid to get naked.
No, that,
it feels good, Jack.
I'm not doing that.
Oh,
Yes! Yo!
There's a part of me that's...
Cut it out! Come on, Jack!
Glad
get back to your roots!
Was not alive during the Me Too.
He talks to invisible people. He sees invisible horses.
God rest
you. He's walking away.
And he's lying naked in the middle of Central Park. I should be surprised. I'm not surprised. Jack's... I'm out of my fucking mind even be here.
Who are you talking to, Jack?
I can't... His penis is just...
I'm talking center to the little people.
Dead center frame.
Are they here?
They're saying, Jack... Go to the nearest liquor store, findeth the Jack of Daniels, that ye may be shit-faced.
Jack of
Dulang, Dulang!
They said that?
You are out of your fucking mind!
Great.
Bingo! Yell! Come on, Jack! Free up the little guy. Let him flap in the breeze.
Terry Gilliam loves Papuna. Sanity.
Oh, Jack!
He's dancing around naked still, people.
Yeah, why not?
It was good stuff. And they cut to... Jack has relented, and he is lying next to Perry. He is not disrobed, but he is there, and he's... I have to say, they do a cutaway when they first get there of, like, four dudes suspiciously walking into the bushes. It was, like, late 80s New York was not great. It was bad.
Stay out of those bushes.
That is no good. So it was a... People may see it sort of in a different context now, because, like, Giuliani cleaned up that city. He started arresting folks and shipping homeless people out, and it was like, yeah, it got better. But no, people were getting... Yeah, it was legit. It's legit to be concerned in New York at night in the park at that point.
There's ass-pounding going on.
That's it's trouble. It's trouble. Sorry. We also skipped past this. Hell Merchants was a title they talked about.
Hell Merchants.
In the video store.
Gotcha.
That I couldn't find Hell Merchants.
Yeah, I have a feel that was a made-up title.
That's probably... That one specific one was probably... Mm-hmm. And then he talked about Purple Bread, which I could not... He could have just been mispronouncing something, or that's another thing. But the box, it says Purple something.
Okay.
So again, this is like... Are these titles lost to history? Mm. At the end of their evening, because they get together, they do the after the nails, and they stage it so Jack is coming home.
He's gonna pick up Anne, they're gonna get some dim sum.
Exactly. And then Lydia happens to be there. So both of the wingmen force their prospective people to go out, and it's adorable. Like it's just more. They do a lot of character...
A
lot of physical comedy. A lot of character paintbrush stuff with the backstory. It's great, folks. I liked it. It's definitely watchable. Good date movie.
Lydia coughs in her hands, picks up some food. It's everything's grotesque.
But at the end of the evening, because Perry is a G, he can talk. This motherfucker can, like, he can break you down. He gets around Lydia's innate fear that he is just one of the others... He's never going to call again. Mm-hmm. He doesn't drink coffee. That comes up.
Yeah.
And he gets her. He's like, I'll call. I will. I will be here. And then they kiss. And she says, and then this comes up a few times, like, you're real. That's a thing. Yeah, they plant that little thing in her. And then she goes away, and he's happy. And he
can't be happy for too long, though.
He can't, because something about her saying goodbye or seeing her walk away... reminds him of his wife for a split second.
Mm-hmm. He's happy again.
Exactly. And so, as we've seen, being reminded of his wife or his prior life, sort of, like, it brings up that the Red Knight, which is a stand-in for, like, walling off in your own psyche. You know what I mean? Like, something he cannot confront, a terror. And so, it kind of triggers, and then the Knight, and this scene is long. He flees from the Knight all across New York. So, yeah, he runs at least from Central Park... Or not Central Park, but the upper... I think when they were on the Upper East. He runs from, like, the Upper East Side down to the Manhattan Bridge.
And then he gets back to the bridge, and that's where we meet those same thugs earlier.
And they're going to kill him. And all poor Perry is seeing is that the Red Knight stands with them and raises his sword to strike. And then he is cut and beaten and Lord knows what.
Yeah, he's stabbed and beaten, and he is put in a catatonic coma.
Catatonic coma. Ugh. And...
So he ultimately does not call Lydia the next day.
Which was like, God, fuck. That was one of the first fucking things I thought about. Anne throws it up there in case anybody missed it. She mentions that. But, yeah, that was a bummer. And then because Jack feels like he's completed his duty.
You Jack's know, he's feeling great about himself. He's patting himself on the
he's
back.
He's processed his life debt, which the Wookiees, I don't think they do that. I think they're in. You're in for life.
They're in for life.
And so because he's hit this point, he tells Anne that he called his agent and he's just going to come in and then he's going to start working again. It's going to be great. And it's a sitcom. So, of course, going back to his old ways.
Immediately goes back to his old ways and gives Anne the boot.
And
the soft boot.
Tries to Ed lays it out where he's like, I think we should slow down. You know, maybe like see other people. And it's like,
it's a real shithole thing to do, Jack.
Well, because they make, I mean, in terms of directing, like they really make you like him in parts. Mm-hmm. Where it's just a masterful job of like, he's showing compassion in his New York-y irritated way. And then he does these nice things. He puts in the time. He does it. He wants to. And then just, I fucking hate him. You're like, what the fuck, asshole? And the Bridges, I love the man.
However, the breakup is...
it's interrupted.
Put on hiatus because we find out that Perry...
It gets a phone call. Call interrupts.
They find his wallet.
Where Anne says, you got to make a choice. Like, why prolong it? We're breaking up, so don't say that. End it now or whatever. Phone rings. Perfect! Perry's fucked up. Catatonic state, coma, in the hospital. Doctor explains his whole past about what happened. And also, while he was running away, we got to see him relive the trauma, too. So we got to relive Perry seeing... Like, they do such a brutal thing where...
It's awful.
Where he's Robin is standing there facing the wife, and then we see the back of her head, the bullet enter, or shells, or whatever it was.
And her brain matter is all on her face.
Sprays
on his face.
Him. Yeah. So I would imagine this is the Red Knight.
He was wearing like a white suit that night also.
Yes.
Yeah, so that
oh, he sees himself in the white suit.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, in the reflection when he's saying goodbye to Lydia. That's what kicks us off down that path.
Oh, gotcha.
And yeah, that was bad. And so he flees, he gets there, he's in the coma. And
there's nothing to be done.
Yeah.
They're not family. And if they were, the state's just going to sign them over to whatever. And then Anne gives him the boot and leaves him there.
Yeah. And then we actually go to an even more crushing scene, which is the next day, because he did call his agent and his agent's like, come on in. We got a script for you. And so walking in, he pretends that he does not know Michael Jeter.
Well, some time has passed. It's not the next day.
I thought that was just the next day there.
No. Because he's got the trench coat again. He's back to Jack. Like he's got the shave and the ponytail.
Oh, that's right. Because some time has passed.
He's been established again on the radio.
Or something.
Yes.
Yeah. And they also set up, we don't know how long Perry could be in this, because we didn't know how long it would be before.
Could be months, could be a year, it's not the next day.
He made the 13 days or 13 years comparison. Mm-hmm. They don't know.
Yeah.
So he's back. Michael Jeter is being, like, grabbed by a cop and pulled out of the Avenue of the Americas, because he looks homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jack almost says something, he turns to him,
and then just blows
He just blows away, yeah. And goes up and in the meeting, and was it John? I think his name's John Delancey, Q, from Star Trek, is the TV exec. And he's pitching us, look, the TV, our network, we want to get into the homeless. But funny. It's a funny show about being homeless without any baggage.
And they love being homeless. That's
great.
Their thing. They have adventures. They have a great time. They're homeless.
And it's called, here's the best part, Home Free. It's about the joys of not having to worry. And
Jack gets up and immediately leaves.
Jack
the office.
Leaves. He looks sick. He immediately leaves the office. He looks for Michael Jeter for just a moment. He asks about him, but he's gone. Mm-hmm. So clearly, I'm just like, wow, I shouldn't have done that.
He goes to the hospital and he has a soliloquy with a comatose Perry.
I wanted to put in that again, but that monologue, he gives a monologue to Perry. That, I think, start to finish is like 5 minutes long.
Wow.
And it is fucking masterful, guys. Because he comes in angry and accusatory. Or no, first he comes in, like, he goes through all the stages of denial. Because he comes in like, well, fine, here you are. And then he's mad, and then he's laughing, and then he says, like, no, I'm not going to do it. And then he's crying at a moment, like, and then he agrees to do it. And fucking, like, it's just a monologue. Rob Williams is just lying there.
Yeah.
Oh, man, when I was jogging through... on Fast Forward, just looking for one of the time codes, it was like, you could see him breathing, and you could see him, like, smiling a little bit as the thing went on.
Now, I was lucky enough to have you send me a copy of this, because I couldn't find it anywhere. But I watched the TV, I'm maybe 8 feet away from the TV, and I swear they did something digitally with Robin Williams' eyes, because those suckers are glued shut. But, again, you're seeing him breathing.
Yeah.
You're seeing him trying not to lose his shit by not smiling.
It might have been smart, because that is a long monologue to put something on your eyes, or put, like, a thing or something.
I think they did something in post where they just kept his eyes just shut, because it looks weird. I encourage you to go back just for that scene.
Everybody honestly. Take a look. We'll pull it up.
Just stare Robin Williams' eyes.
But it's a great monologue about getting the Grail. And so he decides to do it. And there's a fantastic scene where, and that's what sets this up. Cause that was the penultimate, like, I'm still Jack. And he was stepping off into his chosen, knighthood Fisher Kinging duties or whatever it was. And then he must don some of Perry's garb and equipment.
He goes back to the boiler room. He finds all of his notes. He finds his uniform. He for some reason, decides to put the rags on. And in traditional New York fashion, this man is literally climbing up the side of a building. And there's
nobody
foot traffic.
Nobody cares. Yeah. He does throw in a line where he's like, thank God nobody looks up in this town.
Yeah.
That
was a good off-screen line.
That was good. When he almost slips and falls, there's a scary moment. It's just like, thank God nobody ever looks up. And it goes, actually, the robbery goes pretty smooth.
Robbery goes better than expected.
Yeah, it's like, there's some lasers and what have you, but like, he grabs the Grail, which is, I forget what it's an award for, they show it. But
yeah, it's like an architecture
it's
award.
Something benign.
Something silly. It's not a Grail.
Not a Grail.
It's just a silver cup.
It does have a shape. It's Grail shaped. It'd be more confusing if it was like a plaque that was a golf trophy. At least it had assumed the shape. And it was glittery, too.
Yeah.
So that helped.
Very shiny.
So he gets it. He survives the climb, sneaks in, opens the door like it hits the laser thing, runs in, grabs it, he's gone. Heist successful. Brings it back to Perry. Perry wakes up.
Now you skipped one part. Now he's got the Grail in his hand. And he's contemplating climbing back up that wall.
Oh!
Or then he hears a disturbance in the other room, and he peeks in, and the master of the house is overdosed on pills.
I forgot about that.
And
part.
Is killing himself, which is why he decides to run right through the lasers, because that'll call attention and get the medical team. That makes news the next day.
Forgot about that.
Bungled robbery saves a person's life.
That's right. That pops up. Mm-hmm. So another good deed done. Another good deed done.
Two good deeds done.
Two and one. Goes back. Perry's up.
Perry's awake.
And Jack is now new Jack.
Jack is
He's new. Leading all the asylum folks in song. And he's there and he's embracing it. Because he fucking did it. Mm-hmm. He got the Grail.
Yeah, he did.
He was the fool that needed to bring the Grail. There's another monologue in it. A lot of monologues.
A lot of monologues.
Monologue heavy, but explaining the Fisher King about how he needed the Grail to heal himself, even though he was trying to be seek it all of his life. Mm-hmm. And a fool brought it to him. And the Fisher King asked the fool, like, I sent my best man and my greatest folks to find it. How did you find it? He goes, I don't know.
I just thought you were thirsty.
Great. Fantastic. So he's the fool that he's come. And
Lydia shows up. Lydia's been hanging out for a while.
Lydia's
She's been taking
there.
Great care of Perry while he's in his coma.
She gets it. I hope Anne called her. You know what I mean? After they found out he was in a coma. Because she says that line, right?
I don't remember how. It's just established that Lydia's just been coming to the hospital. She somehow figured it out that he was in the hospital. And she's giving him sheets and pajamas.
Because Anne said it, where it's like, okay. Because Lydia didn't, because she didn't get the call. Like, I think she must have connected the dots there.
Has to
have connected the dots.
It'd be nice if she did.
And then he goes to see Anne.
Himself on the mercy of her love.
And goes up and he goes, very begrudgingly says, hey, I love you. And she, of course, like, goes up and closes the door. Excuse me, I did not hear you. Would you repeat yourself? And it's a cute scene of just getting, pulling it pulling it out of him.
This is a big moment because the entire time, like, she's been trying to get intimate with him, and he is physically repelled at times.
Yeah, and she does nakedly say, she's not naked, but just, I love you. That's why.
Yeah.
During the breakup, she says that she loves him. Yeah, great scene of them in the asylum. Love.
She takes him back.
We shake him back, and we get one last VHS tape box falling down gag.
Yes.
They knock over the porn.
All the porn in the house falls down.
All the porn comes down. Very symbolic. Wonderful. Very symbolic. And then, great last scene. They're
naked in the park.
They are naked cloud busting together, and they are singing. Fantastic.
Cue fireworks, mm-hmm. light display.
All of the city is lit up.
The end title card.
End title card.
It's very nice in this movie, Kai.
Good stuff.
Yeah, thanks for recommending this.
I think it's just a solid movie. And this Terry Gilliam, I don't know what happened to like his brain or things. He's the Zero Theorem. I didn't get. Hmm. I mean, I got it, but I don't know if there's like a weirdness to Terry Gilliam.
Oh, for sure.
There's an edge where it's just like, I think it maybe has changed because a lot of the subjects in here, like for this is just like. Mental health. I mean, it's seen through the lens of a 90s shock jock. Mm-hmm. But, like, take Brazil. It's essentially people like to make the 1984 comparison. But just what it is living inside the machine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like a big bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And being lost in it and dehumanized by it. And it's like, that is what that movie is. And it carries this weirdness. And the Baron Munchausen, Time Bandits, another fucking great one.
I was way too young to understand Time Bandits at the time.
I
remember, again, a man on horseback being the most terrifying thing about that show.
Absolutely. I think that was, anyway, we'll get into that one another time. Mm-hmm. But would you recommend this movie to other people?
Absolutely.
I would too.
This was number 31 top grossing movies of 1991.
There it is. That's not...
That was not
actually,
easy.
That's actually... Better than I thought it would have done.
Yeah.
Because Terry Gilliam does not get a lot of love from critics, audiences, what have you.
Right in between Regarding Henry and Out for Justice.
There you go. I guess that feels right because he gets all of his stuff, like my favorite things, like I've come to it years later. It had to develop its own like cult following.
Okay, well, let me read you the next five in front of it. So there's Regarding Henry. Mm-hmm. That's number 30.
Yeah.
29 is Point Break.
Oh, really?
Thelma and Louise.
Oh, I'm good then. We're good.
The Rocketeer.
I'm good. Never mind. I'm good. Rocketeer, Thelma and Louise. This is good company.
New Jack City.
Solid. Oh. Okay, that's fine then. I feel better then. Yeah. Yeah, no, it should even be lower then. We should be like in the 60s. Just because people, yeah, it's not easy to love Terry all the time. But, yeah, no. there was another couple. Oh, he did the Emporium Wonder Megorium? What the fuck was that one called?
I have no idea.
And that one wasn't entirely his fault because Heath died in the middle of it and then he changed the movie. Oh. So then a bunch of actors were playing the Heath part.
Oh, I heard something about that.
And then it was fabricated weird and that doesn't work.
No.
I should probably clarify fabricated weird because it all is in the movie.
But
the plot it was they trying to be a thing. The plot they disturbed and it didn't work. It was just confusing, which sucks.
Sounds confusing. I haven't seen it.
There was that. Well, good stuff, everybody. Thanks for joining us on another podcast. Both recommend Fisher King. Good stuff. Love you, Robin Williams, Jeff Bridges. Mercedes
Rule. A lot less funny without you, Robin.
Oh, yeah. Michael Jeter. You were wonderful. Anyway, good stuff. Check out KushaKai.com.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
All